Well, there's news today that the Cambridge-based Monitor Group, a consulting firm founded by Harvard professors that worked with Libya from 2006 to 2008, has conceded they should have registered as a lobbying group and in the future will avoid doing public relations for foreign governments. The Monitor Group had maintained that they were only helping the Libyan regime reform. Critics, of course, accused them of taking gobs of money, including fees for academics, to put a good spin on a bad regime. And today, the Boston Globe is reporting that after an internal investigation, which we spoke to the Monitor Group about on this program not long ago, Monitor has decided to retroactively register with the government its past work with Libya, as well as a contract with Jordan. That leaves, according to our next guest, millions of dollars in unreleased lobbying information. He says there are dozens of groups that aren't as transparent. Ken Silverstein is a contributing editor at Harper's. He's also a fellow at the Open Society Institute. We thought this would be a good day to get his insight on just what goes on in the world of lobbying, registered and otherwise. He joins us from the Monitor Studios. And Ken, in 2007, you posed as an American businessman looking for a firm to burnish the reputation of Turkmenistan. The title of the book you wrote about the experience flags how you felt about it. Turkmenist Scam, How Washington Lobbyists Fought to Flak for a Stalinist Dictatorship.
Well, yeah, I did think that most of what the lobbying firms proposed to do was effectively a scam to be pulled on the American public and policymakers to try to convince them that the client that I was allegedly representing, Turkmenistan, which is one of the world's only remaining Stalinist dictatorships along with North Korea, but they were going to promote this ridiculous spin that Turkmenistan wanted to improve its image and was taking steps towards democracy and was going to improve its human rights record. So that's why the title of the book was Turkmenistan.
And we're going to hear some of the details in a moment. But first, remind us, what is the legality? There's a law, FARA, Foreign Agents Registration Act, and there's also the Lobbying Disclosure Act.
Well, the lobbying firms are supposed to disclose their work, whether they're working for a domestic client or for a foreign country or foreign corporation. The problem is that a lot of lobbyists apparently don't comply with the law. There was one estimate I saw a few years ago that only about half of all lobbying firms actually disclosed their activities. But even putting that aside, the real problem is that you only have to disclose your work if it's direct lobbying, if you're going up to Capitol Hill or to meet with administration officials face to face. You know, you have to disclose that. But if it's public relations, if you're not meeting with government officials, if you're just trying to spin newspapers, say, or influence public opinion in some other way, you don't have to disclose that at all. There's a lot of activity that effectively amounts to lobbying that is completely under the radar screen.
The Sunlight Foundation and ProPublica have been putting a database together. Sunlight Foundation is a nonprofit, nonpartisan transparency group. And they found 280 lobbying firms reported making at least 22,000 contacts with government officials between 2007 and 2008. That's, though, you know, registered lobbying firms contacting government officials. How big do you think this broader world of PR firms is?
It's hard to know for sure, again, because so much of this is under the radar, but clearly it's a multi-billion dollar industry. I mean, it is an enormous industry in town. I mean, I think of it as another arm of government also, the lobbying community. Most of it is domestic lobbying. A smaller component, a lot smaller, is the foreign lobbying. However, one thing that's pretty interesting is that the foreign lobbying can be particularly lucrative. I mean, the whole industry is quite lucrative. The fees are very, very high. But if you hook a foreign client, and particularly if it's a dirty foreign client, a controversial foreign client, that's where you can really make the big bucks. I mean, that's the irony. The dirtier the client, the more money you can charge. And I encountered that in my reporting this piece on Turkmenistan.
Let's talk about Turkmenistan. You pose as a businessman, an American businessman, with interests in Turkmenistan. You want to spend money to help improve its image in the U.S. So tell us some of the exchanges and some of the responses.
I approached the firms and said I was representing an energy firm which had a stake in the Turkmen oil fields, and we thought it would help our relationship with the government if we hired a lobbying firm and did some work on their behalf. And by the way, that is a common situation. A lot of companies that want to do business abroad do seek to heighten their credentials with foreign governments by doing lobbying for them. So it's not even reported directly as a foreign government lobbying, but a company will be a go-between. So I approached a number of the top lobbying firms in Washington. I didn't want some desperate lobbyist who could barely feed his family to take the case. I wanted to go to the blue chip firms and ask them if they'd be willing to go to work for this government. And I really did set up an extreme situation where, Turkmenistan, just a rotten government, a Stalinist dictatorship. The old dictator had recently died, and he'd been replaced in a bogus election by his personal dentist. And, you know, I thought this would be a perfect time to get a lobbyist. When I approached them, I said, hey, look, we've got this new government here, never mind the fact that the president won 95% of the vote. But I said, there's a new government, and we're really, you know, it's really trying to take some good steps, and this is a perfect time for us to hire a lobbyist. So I approached some of the big firms, and they all expressed interest. Two of them expressed very, very keen interest. That was Cassidy and APCO Associates. And so I went in for meetings with them. I actually had said that I was based in London. I was coming to town all the while I was actually here in Washington. But I came in and went to see two of the firms and asked them, you know, would you be willing to work for me, my client, on behalf of the government of Turkmenistan? And they were very, very keen to do it. And partly because they were going to really charge outlandish rates. Cassidy wanted a $5 million contract. And they actually said, you know, it's a difficult client, Turkmenistan, so, you know, a one-year approach won't work. We'd have to do it over a multi-year contract because of the bad reputation.
Well, and what were they telling you they were going to do?
They had a varied approach. They were going to influence policymakers, and they were going to influence the public, and they were going to influence the media. So, for example, they were going to bring Turkmen officials here, and they said it would be a simple matter, both the firms, because they have so many former government officials and elected officials at these firms. They said it'll be simple for us to set up meetings on Capitol Hill and with the administration. We can get a Turkmen official in the door for meetings. They also said that they would figure out a way to take U.S. congressional delegations over to Turkmenistan, you know, on these one of these feel-good tours. APCO specifically said that it's not quite legal to do this because you're not supposed to have lobbyists sponsoring trips for members of Congress. But they said they could probably line up a university or a nonprofit organization in Turkmenistan to sponsor the trip so that they could get around that restriction.
That's Harper's contributor Ken Silverstein talking about his undercover adventure in the lobbying world. And as we heard, the winking approach lobbying firms he encountered took to working for foreign countries, greasing the skids so these countries could do business with U.S. companies like the one Ken claimed to work for. When we come back, what about the claim that these companies, like the Cambridge-based Monitor Group, were hoping to reform these regimes? Here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. On the web at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're getting a behind-the-scenes look at the lobbying and PR machine as the Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Monitor Group announced today it made a mistake in working for Libya. Our guest is Ken Silverstein, who posed as an American businessman to find a D.C. firm willing to burnish the reputation of Turkmenistan in order to make it more palatable for him to do business in Turkmenistan's oil field. Ken is a contributing editor at Harper's. He's also a fellow at the Open Society Institute. He wrote the book Turkmenistan Scam after some of those lobbyists took his bait, offering their services for multimillion dollar fees. But Ken, the stories you just told us about how eager these companies were to work with you, we're so fish in the barrel damning. Let me play devil's advocate for a moment. You told these lobbyists that Turkmenistan was reforming, the same thing that was said about Libya and was thought to be true about Libya at some point. So isn't it possible these lobbying firms thought they were helping nudge a repressive country in the right direction?
I don't think it's possible at all.
Okay.
I would say look at Libya as well. I mean, Gaddafi was not ever interested in promoting democracy. There was evidence that he wanted to smooth his relationship with the United States, and American oil companies were desperate to get into Libya. But the idea that Gaddafi was going to democratize Libya and take important steps in human rights, that was always garbage. And the same in Turkmenistan. There would be no way, looking at the evidence, that one could ever have concluded that the Turkmen government was going to open up and become a reformist government.
You mean if they'd done some due diligence, they would have seen that?
This was immediately apparent to anybody. I mean, you looked at the new leader, who was the old dictator's former dentist, and he had some position as a minister, I think as a health minister, where he had basically run the healthcare system into the ground. The guy was a complete hack. He'd held a completely sham election. There was no evidence at all that they were moving towards democracy. So, of course, you know, when I approached them as a client who was in bed with the government of Turkmenistan, I was going to say that. But if they had done any due diligence at all, it would have been apparent that that was a fiction. They didn't care about that.
Well, you know, it's funny. They didn't do any due diligence about you either, at least the first company.
Well, this is exactly right. I mean, I presented them with very little information about my firm, which didn't exist, of course. And I said, I can't tell you anything about us because, you know, discretion is, you know, the lifeblood of our organization. And they said, fine.
So when all is said and done, you're not a representative of the energy industry trying to bring Turkmenistan into the fold. You're an investigative journalist. What did these companies say when that was revealed?
They first tried to say that somehow things were taken out of context, even though I had business plans from both of them where they laid out what they would do directly for the government of Turkmenistan. And then they chose to attack me, to say that, oh, the undercover tactic was dirty and that I shouldn't have done it. But they never challenged any of the key facts in this story. And they were unable to because they knew that I had them cold. When I went into APCO, they actually gave me a PowerPoint presentation and they gave me a hard copy to take with me. And Cassidy, they contacted me and said, gee, we're really interested in this client. Can we send you an additional proposal, additional information? And so they sent me, I think, a 12-page proposal laying out what they do for Turkmenistan.
Well, if this were a Robert Altman movie, you would have been sort of discredited. And a few weeks down the road, we would see Turkmenistan into the future, sort of a, you know, a Turkmenistan festival in downtown D.C. But instead, a little while later, you do end up attending an Angola Day conference, which felt like the kind of thing the companies had promised you.
Well, it's exactly the sort of thing the companies had promised. They had said that they could set up these events at think tanks around town where it would appear to be independent, but in fact, they would basically control the agenda and they would have speakers come on who would all say nice things about Turkmenistan. I did then, shortly afterwards, go to this meeting, Angola Day.
And remind us, Angola, as you write, not Turkmenistan, but one of the most crooked and predatory regimes in the world.
Absolutely one of the most corrupt governments in the world. The president has been in office for over 20 years, always promising elections but never holding them. It's a terrible government. And I went to this event, and you actually had companies active in Angola who were sponsors of the event. And you had all these speakers who had nothing but good things to say about Angola, as well as Angolan government officials. These events happen constantly. Probably every day of the week in Washington, you can find an event in town.
What do you think should happen going forward? There's a debate at Harvard as to whether or not some of the Harvard experts should take these huge fees to work for consulting companies and then, in fact, maybe write op-ed pieces without acknowledging they're being paid. But the press has a role, too, I would think, to really vet those people who end up on their op-ed pages.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I discovered when reporting this piece, when I went to APCO, they told me that they actually had somebody on staff whose job all day, you know, his 9-to-5 job, was to place op-eds in American newspapers. I think the key thing really is transparency. And lobbying is going to exist. I think it's naive to suggest that, you know, oh, how are you going to stop lobbying firms from taking money from these clients? It's just not going to happen. I mean, where do you draw the line? Is it okay to take money from Angola? but it's not okay to take money from Pakistan. I don't know how you can regulate that, but I do think that there should be much tighter disclosure rules about lobbying, and especially about these variants of lobbying that right now are completely unregulated. Any time that you're trying to influence public opinion or public policy and you're receiving money from a private client, whether it's a corporation or an NGO or a nonprofit organization or a foreign government, you should have to disclose it. That's where I think the rules really need to be tightened up.
That's Ken Silverstein, contributing editor for Harper's, also a fellow at the Open Society Institute. His adventures as a fake businessman looking for companies to bring good public relations to Turkmenistan are told in the book Turkmenist Scam, How Washington Lobbyists Fought to Flak for a Stalinist Dictatorship. You can read his article and see more about the book at hearnow.org. Ken, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, next week on Here and Now, how to say this? Not the metaphorical stuff that we just heard get shoveled in Washington, but the real thing. How we're depleting our soil because we're not using our greatest resource. That stuff that hits the fan. Here and Now.